From the land-grant university in Urbana-Champaign, Illinois, this is the Closing Mark Report. It's USDA Report Day, June the 10th, 2009. I'm Todd Gleason. In a few moments, we'll talk about the commodity markets with Paul Cooley of ADM Investor Services. He's into Oakland, Illinois, and later in the half hour, we'll discuss the cash grain market with Matt Blaisdell of the Anderson's Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana. And then, as we close out the program, we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. It all happens right here on this Wednesday edition of the CMR. The Closing Mark Report is a production of Illinois Public Media from the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois.
The Closing Market Report is made possible by AgriGold Hybrids, funding agricultural programming as an additional service to the many AgriGold customers in the AM580 listening area. AgriGold, the corn specialists. More information is at AgriGold.com or at 800-262-7333.
On a Wednesday afternoon, USDA Report Day, futures finished like this in Chicago at the CME Group. Nearby, July soft red winter wheat at $4.35¾, down 8¼. September at $4.44¾, 8½ lower. In December, this is actually the corn pit, $4.58, down 8¼. Let me give you those numbers again. July corn, $4.35¾, a settlement price, 8¼ lower. September at $4.44¾ in the corn, down 8½, and December at $4.58, down 8¼. March at $4.69, 8½ lower. The May corn, down 8¾ at $4.76. Back at the top of the page for the wheat, July futures, $5.96, 17¾ lower. September at $6.24½, down 17½ cents. From the bean pit, nearby July contract, $12.46, up 2½ cents. The August down 2 at $11.75¼. September, $11.12¼, up 2¼. November beans, $10.79¼, up 6¾. July bean meal at $4.13.40, up $5.60. July oil up 84 cents at $38.61 for the bean oil. June live cattle futures $79.75, 42½ cents lower. The August at $80.82½, down 90 cents. August feeders 15 lower at $96.17½, and the June lean hog futures down 27½ cents for the day at $57.07. You're listening to the Closing Mark Report. It's a production of Illinois Public Media on the U of I campus in Urbana-Champaign. Here's what the outside markets look like at this hour. July crude oil futures at $71.33 a barrel, finished up $1.32. August at $72.03, up $1.29 for the crude. July ethanol at $1.76 and 6 cents, down just about 0.7 cents. Natural gas at $3.70 and 8 cents, 2 3/10 lower. The RBOB gasoline at $2.01 and a half, up 4 8/10 cents. And the heating oil, diesel fuel, $1.83 and 4 cents, up 2 6/10 cents. July propane futures up $0.01 and 9 cents at $86 and 3 cents. And the gold at $954 in the July contract, just about 10 cents higher for the day. Dow Jones Industrial Average now stands at 8706, 57 points lower. And the U.S. dollar at 8032 is up 0.53. The CRB index on the afternoon at 26101 is down 1.37 for the day. Here's what the weather forecast for the two-state region looks like this afternoon. From our own Mike Sola, he says tonight in the north, mostly cloudy skies. Elsewhere, cloudy, occasional showers and thunderstorms. Those will happen mainly in the south. Lows will range from 50 near Lake Michigan to 70 in the far south. And then tomorrow in northern Illinois, mostly cloudy skies in central sections in northern Indiana. Mostly cloudy, scattered showers, a few isolated thunderstorms. They'll diminish during the afternoon. In the south, cloudy, occasional showers and thunderstorms. Highs will range from 63 in northern Indiana to 85 in the far south. The extended forecast says an active weather pattern will continue, although it appears that it will become less active by early next week. Over the next several days, precip will continue to be greatest in the south, with up to 4 inches possible along the Ohio River. More on the ag weather at the bottom of the hour.
Todd Gleason services are made available to WILL by University of Illinois Extension.
Agricultural programming is made possible by Lernard Seed Service, an independent dealer providing DeKalb and Asgro seed products, including Asgro's new Roundup Ready 2-yield soybeans. Lernard Seed Service provides services to help customers in East Central Illinois maximize profits. 217-497-2270.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media on the Urbana-Champaign campus of the University of Illinois. USDA released on this 10th day of June its latest WASDE numbers and some crop production figures. And the ending stocks now for corn on the 09 are pegged at 1.6. That's what's expected to be left in the bin by the time we get to this fall. The average trade guess at 1.597 billion bushels. And the 1.6 billion is the same as the USDA's May estimate. Soybeans down to 110 million bushels. The May estimate was 130 from USDA. Average trade guess was just above the 110 at 114. And the wheat ending stocks are still the same at 669 million bushel. On the line to talk about those numbers and many others with us today is Paul Cooley. He's with ADM Investor Services out of Oakland, Illinois. Good afternoon to you, Paul.
Hi, Todd. We had about a half inch of rain at the Oakland Water Service here in Oakland, Illinois today. Thank goodness we didn't get a lot more rain than that. Some of our friends in southern Coles County got some flooding rains. As you mentioned, the weather forecasters are talking about the southern Illinois getting a lot more rain on Thursday, and the local the private people say Oakland here probably get a third to an inch of rain on Thursday, but it's basically a kinder forecast than what we were receiving or getting or forecasting earlier in the week.
Let's talk about some of the localized areas, and maybe you can take up the area around Oakland, and you're located a little further to the east than we are in the eastern part of Illinois near Danville. And I wondered what conditions are like, how far farmers are there as comparison to other places that you talk to.
We are picking up in the areas where they got the crop planted. Gee whiz, it looks like they planted as much corn as we did last year. In this area, we are getting reports of definitely increases of soybeans. And, I mentioned that earlier in Indiana, my opinion is that there's more beans there.
And
the problem is from here south, the percentage of increase in beans is going to go up.
Well, I have a question on that. Will they take prevented planting on corn and then come back later? I don't remember whether they can actually do that or not.
The insurance game is tricky. And, my general impression is with $10 beans, the logic is to switch to beans and get covered on your beans. Now, there are some people that maybe will just take the preventive planting, but I think that that's further south in another, specialized situations. The other factor is that this June the 10th is it's kind of a demarcation line, as far as a lot of corn being planted here in central Illinois and not planting, going to soybeans. I think the other thing that I think is definitely the case is that the $10 beans is a big incentive to plant soybeans, and I think that was one of the reasons that people that made the decision to plant more beans, in these wetter areas.
Well, let's talk about the USDA reports as it's related to those numbers, of course. The old crop beans, we've known for a long time, are in dire straits, at least in terms of supply. That because Argentina had just about half a crop, it seems. And exports are up, especially to China. USDA lowered the ending stocks for this year, or what would be left in the bin this fall, to 110 million bushels. That's down from 130 in May. And for next year, though, they did lower the ending stocks figure, but we started there in May at 230. The average trade guess was 211, and USDA says 210. What do you think of that number?
Well, I think, the think tank people we have the most confidence in feel that the soybean crush still needs to be curtailed 15 to 25 million bushels. and the exports are underestimated by the government by 10 million. I generally think that the numbers themselves augur for a very pricey bean to continue in the old crop. Today's price action, we saw the continuation of the Goldman rule. The Board of Trade used some unusual measures by allowing the July contract to trade another 90 seconds longer than the 115 trading rule or close. And I think this is a new dynamic tool the Board of Trade, the open outcry people use to handle that kind of special volume. The other thing I think we ought to mention here is this. The livestock industry isn't going to call up a XYZ major grain company and say, we want you to import XYZ soybean meal. We will honor those. I don't think the livestock industry is in any financial condition to do it. I think the highs will probably come a little later in the season than earlier, like some of the other traditional things, because the demand for soybean meal by the livestock industry or lysine or other byproducts to carry them through. So the real price discovery, I think, is still days away.
Yeah, well, I've got something to read on that, and maybe you can comment on this, because I've been thinking about what that means with the livestock industry. And I guess maybe you can clarify something, too, for me. The numbers you gave, so on the 110, the people you're talking to say it's at least 15 lower than that and possibly another 15 beyond that, so down to 80 million bushels? Is that what you're thinking?
That's some of the conversation. Now, some of that will be met by, delaying shipments of possibly just running out of soybean meal, that type of thing, paying early premiums for quick shipment beans and shipping beans from one part of the U.S. to the other.
Okay, and then on the livestock numbers, you say that the hog producer, the livestock producer, whether they're hog or otherwise, aren't just going to call up and say, hey, you need to import.
They don't have the power that they had three to five years ago.
They don't have that power, but I've got a question on that. Because
or the economic strength to even write the check.
Yeah, we've been discussing who's the marginal producer left in the United States or in North America. So I went back and picked up some Stats Canada numbers on their last release, thinking that maybe that Canada was the one that was the marginal producer on livestock. Let me read this to you, and then you can comment on it as you want. This is as of April 28th, their last release. On April 1st, farmers, these are Canadian farmers, had estimated 11.9 million hogs on their farms. That's down 1.1 million or 8.6% from the same date in 2008. It's the first time since January of 1998, Canada says, that hog inventories in that nation were below 12 million. Hog inventories have been declining for the past 3 years, they say. Part of that's because of the country of origin legislation here in the United States. As of April the 1st, Canada had 8,300 hog operations, 1,000 fewer farmers than 1 year ago. Part of that came because they have a cull breeding swine program to buy out whole herds. And they've just been dropping the number of herds. Hog producers in Canada, this I think is the important number, exported an estimated 1.7 million hogs in the last 3 months. That would have been in February, March, and April, down 42.8% from the peak, which was reached in the first quarter of 2008. So the question, I guess, is if you're a producer in the United States and maybe if you're a producer of soybeans and corn in the United States, do you have to be that fearful about the domestic livestock herd disappearing? Or is, in fact, the marginal producer in North America, Canada, and they're just getting out of the business? Or did I give you too much information?
Well, I think that's an interesting concept. As a landowner in central Illinois, am I worried about land prices the next year and a half going down? The answer is no. Do I think that prices of corn and soybeans are going to get to drastic low levels because of livestock? No. I think the energy thing is a big stabilizer in the corn price. We've got some high-priced beans this year. November 9 beans and November 10 beans are very pricey.
Right.
And so the necessity to bid for acres is still very much alive, at least on the Chicago futures market. Do I think we'll see a surprise of more acres than what the government came out with in March? Yes, we do. We think they were off. We think that the farmer was a little depressed. Fertilizer prices were awful high. The ability to make money was low, and they didn't get all the acres down. So, you know, we are in for a lot of surprises here over the next 30 days, and the weather still unfolding is another big surprise.
So on old crop, bullish beans, cautiously friendly beans and
corn,
and new crop?
Yeah, I think, you know, it's the old Joe Kennedy deal is that, you know, only a fool holds out for the last dollar, and I always quote Mr. Tabor of, where I started work at, was saying any fool can make $1 million. It's the smart man that can hold on to it. And so you got to use a combination between Mr. Kennedy and Mr. Tabor on marketing your old crop beans from here on out.
On that note, you have a profitable day. Okay?
Yeah, a profitable day from both of us.
All right. Thanks much. Paul Cooley is with ADM Investor Services. He's out of Oakland, Illinois. Joins us on the Closing Mark Report. That happens on Wednesday afternoons.
Agricultural programs are made possible by First Midwest Bank, serving Illinois' agricultural community with locations in Champaign, Danville, Galesburg, Morris, and McHenry. More information is available from Mike Morris in McHenry at 815-344-7213. First Midwest Bank, member FDIC, an equal housing lender.
You're listening to the Closing Mark Report from Illinois Public Media. It's public radio for the farming world. I'm U of I Extension's Todd Gleason, the host of this program and of Commodity Week, both of which you can hear on our website. Please visit. The address is willag.org. That's willag.org. You can hear those two programs, other agricultural programming, including our agricultural weather forecast from the early morning and the afternoon, as a podcast. If you'd like, sign up at willag.org. And don't forget, while you're there signing up, to sign up for our weekend newsletter. Just hit subscribe over on the right-hand side of the page. Up next, now, managing pigs in tough times. We'll talk about reproduction. Hog producers around the globe are, of course, facing very tough economic times. I'll have more on what it means and how they must do their level best to choose very, very good breeding stock. The high price of feedstuffs, corn and soybean meal in particular, make it imperative for pork producers to do their very best job possible when choosing which gilts to breed. University of Illinois Extension swine specialist Rob Knox says the selection process should be done with the young females when they're between 140 and 160 days of age, and only if their weight gain has averaged 1.2 pounds or 0.55 kilos a day. With the first selection criteria out of the way, the next step is to make sure the gilt is structurally sound and has 12 to 14 evenly spaced and formed nipples. Knox says after selecting the gilts to be bred, puberty induction is an important step. This allows the producer to select fertile females sooner, reducing the number of open days and consequently the amount of feed used before the female becomes productive.
We want to keep gilts in group pens with between 4 and 40 in each pen. We want to avoid crowding and provide at least 8 square feet per gilt. And we want to begin physical or fence line boar exposure using about 20 to 30 minutes of exposure each day, beginning somewhere around 160 to 170 days of age.
Knox says the gilts should not be bred until they've reached a weight of about 300 pounds or 136 kilos. And have shown their second estrus or reached 200 days of age.
Typically, these animals that have reached 300 pounds and have reached second estrus will produce more piglets in their lifetime than animals bred at less mature ages.
U of I Extension's Knox says gilts that fail to show estrus by 200 days of age should be treated to induce estrus and bred, or they should be culled. You can learn more on gilt and sow reproduction from Rob Knox on the Managing Pig Production in Tough Times website. It is sponsored by the Illinois Pork Producers Association at www.ilpork.com. For University of Illinois Extension, I'm Todd Gleason.
Agricultural information is made possible with support from ADM. ADM thanks America's farmers because everything they do starts with you.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report from Illinois Public Media. It is a Wednesday afternoon. The folks up at the Anderson's Climbers facility in Delphi, Indiana are on the line with us. Matt Blaisdell is here. Good afternoon to you, Matt.
Afternoon, Todd.
What did you think of the report this morning to begin with?
I thought it was pretty much a non-issue. You know, basically the only change that was probably any chatter was the yield, and with them cutting the feed for next year, kind of was a scratch. And, you know, we had a little strength here, but mainly looked to the outside market with the oil kind of leading the way on the commodities here with them, with the trade thinking that we had to get a build instead. We had a draw in our inventories.
You know, those are a couple of numbers that I have not mentioned yet. I think they dropped the yield by about a bushel and a half or 1.3. Is that right? I don't remember exactly. Let's see. 1.3 to 153.4.
Yep.
So they ended up with a coming crop instead of a 12.1 of an 11.9, which is down 1.3% as it happens as well. And then the other number you mentioned was that their expectation is that about 200 million bushels, is that right? I think that's the right number, less feed and residual use.
Exactly.
In the United States, too. So those were the two things. Both changed primarily in the corn. But were discounted fairly quickly by the trade, I guess.
Yeah, you know, we looked like my interpretations. We were trying to get to, say, July futures at magic number of 450 that we haven't been able to trade through it. We got to 449 and three quarters, and as soon as we got there, it seemed like within 10 or 15 minutes we were negative and really never changed the tone the rest of the day.
Hey, one other question. Paul Cooley mentioned earlier, and I didn't get a chance or just didn't bother to ask follow up with him, that trade lasted a little longer than usual by 90 seconds today. Did you hear that, and why was that the case?
You know, I noticed that, too, and I didn't. I haven't asked our people in Chicago to know why that was the case either. I didn't know if it's on petition.
Well, I know Paul said why the case was, so we'll both have to go back to willag.org and listen to it again, I suppose. We'll find out, won't we?
Yeah.
How about in your area? What are farmers thinking about the crop, and how's it looking?
Yeah, I think in our area, you know, say we were 3 weeks ago and had this crop, we'd be great. You know, for the most part, the crop looks pretty good.
Mm-hmm.
It's just 2.5, 3 weeks behind. That's really our only issue. For the most part, these levels that we've seen here, even before we are negative, are nothing new. We're still at the high end of what we have traded in the last 2 weeks, so we really haven't seen much move. Guys are still in the field either side dressing and getting some spraying done. They just feel like they're still behind the eight ball with just, you know, being a week removed from planting.
Right. And now USDA did have some figures on that one as well that show that basically we're on par with last year. Would that not be the case in your area, though, that we're about the same time frame as we were last year or not?
I think in our area we are a little behind. Most guys in our area were done planting corn in the by, say, May 10th, and this year they didn't get done until Memorial Day weekend.
Your bids for the day?
Yeah, Climbers Corn ends at 441, Delphi Beans at 1261.
Matt, thanks much.
Thanks, Todd.
Matt Blaisdell is with the Anderson's Climbers facility located there in Delphi, Indiana. It is tied, of course, to an ethanol plant. We talked to him about that occasionally, too. In just 2 minutes, we'll talk with Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated about the agricultural weather forecast right here on Illinois Public Media's Closing Market Report.
It's National Strawberry Rhubarb Pie Day. On this day in agricultural history in 1768, Samuel Slater was born. An English-American mechanical engineer, Slater is credited with founding the American cotton textile industry. He established the first successful cotton mill in Pawtucket, Rhode Island. In 1822, Peter Henderson was born. A Scottish-American scientist, he is known as the father of American horticulture. He published Gardening for Profit, the first American book devoted entirely to market gardening. Henderson practiced what he wrote. He began a seed business in 1865. In 1900, Fred Waring was born. He provided financial development for improving the electric blender. Waring wanted a machine that could puree raw vegetables for the ulcer diet his doctors prescribed. The Waring blender, originally called the Miracle Mixer, debuted in 1937 and sold for $29.75. By 1954, 1 million Waring blenders had been sold. In 1902, Frank Hardart and Joe Horn opened the first automat at 818 Chestnut Street in Philadelphia. It was a combination of fast food vending machines and a cafeteria. The opening is generally considered the birth date of the modern fast food chain. And in 1953, John H. Kraft received a patent for the manufacture of soft surface curd cheese. The patent had a provision discussing how the mold pad could be readily removed from the cheese surface. And that's this day in agricultural history.
You're listening to the Closing Market Report on a Wednesday afternoon. Time to take a look at the agricultural weather here on Illinois Public Media. Drew Lerner of World Weather Incorporated joins us from his Kansas City, Missouri office. Good afternoon to you, Drew.
Good afternoon, Todd.
Tell me about the weather right here in the Midwest to start with.
Well, we're still in the same old rainy mode. One system after the other marching across the region. This is going to continue for a little while longer. The nice thing about the pattern we're in at the moment, if you want to call it nice, is that the rain intensities will ease up a little bit now with the next couple of disturbances that come by the region. Now, there'll still be some locally strong thunderstorms, but we're not going to get those general soakings that occur across the region. And really, if you step back and you get away from the issue about late planting and look at the crops that are out there and established, that you're almost looking at ideal conditions for a fair amount of the Midwest, not only in this part of the region, but also in the Western Corn Belt. A good mix of warm temperatures coming up over the next week to 10 days, coupled with periodic shower and thunderstorm activity. You couldn't ask for a better weather pattern. And it looks like it's going to be sustainable for a while, so we should see some pretty healthy crop progress as far as development is concerned as we move forward through this next 2 or 3 week period.
Kind of cool for the daytime highs, but I don't think the corn will mind that too much.
Right, right, and we will get away from that. The cool weather that we've got out there right now is only going to last for a little while longer. Our temperatures during the latter part of this week, more likely the weekend, through all of next week, will be much more seasonable, and we'll be looking at temperatures running in the upper 70s and 80s through a fair amount of the Midwest, which really is ideal conditions for corn. It really likes that a lot, and I think we'll see the development rates increase across the region.
We did hear some whispers from the northwestern corner of Iowa that they would have liked to have had a rainfall or a little bit more rainfall. How are they faring at this point?
Well, they're hanging in there. We had some problems with dryness over a large part of the western Corn Belt, extending from Nebraska up into Minnesota, catching that northwest part of Iowa. And then over this past weekend, we got some substantial rains to occur in Nebraska, which was actually the driest area in the Corn Belt at that point. Some of the rain worked its way into western Iowa, but it did not reach the northwest corner there, and that area still needs a good drink of water. It is not critically dry, though. In fact, there is no area in the U.S. Corn Belt that is critically dry at this point, and we don't expect any such development to occur for a while. And the forecast, as I mentioned before, will bring additional showers and thunderstorms to the western belt, including those drier areas, over the next 10 days to 2 weeks.
How about in China? How are they doing?
Actually, they're doing fairly well also. There was a period here in northeast China, which is very, very important soybean and corn production region, that they had actually gotten too dry in late May. But we've had about a week's worth of cool and showery weather now, and that region is now showing a pretty darn good soil moisture profile for this time of the year. There is yet another week ahead of scattered showers in that dry, in that previously dry region in the northeast, and temperatures will also be a little bit on the mild side for another week here. So eventually we'll hear complaints about it being too moist and too cool, and a change back the other direction will be necessary. Just a little further to the west of that, though, there is a pretty large area of net drying underway. It's really favorable for wheat and rapeseed harvesting, but eventually it's going to slow down some of the summer crop development in unirrigated areas. So China's got kind of a mixed pattern right now, and that's going to continue for a while longer.
Drew, thanks so much.
Thank you, Todd. Take care.
That's Drew Lerner. He's with World Weather Incorporated out of Kansas City. Joins us here on the Closing Market Report each and every Wednesday afternoon. I'm Todd Gleason.